So from now on here, the main text. So if there is some special explanations to be met, if there is something to be explained in detail, I will explain. Otherwise, I will just read it down. How engaging in the proper practice, he gained the good qualities of experiential knowledge. Where, if you have the book, we are on the page number 38. Oh. In general, the three precious scriptural collections include all of the scriptural teachings of the Gaudiya. Thus, the three precious trainings must also include the teachings that they are realized. With respect to that, the scriptures and their commentaries repeatedly praise training and ethical discipline as the basis for all good qualities, such as the training in concentration and wisdom. Therefore, I doubt that you must have the God qualities knowledge to occur into one's training and ethical discipline. The Adisha possesses the training in ethics, it has three. Wherein the outline of how Adisha possesses superior vows of individual liberation. On the page number 39 now. And we are now in outline 3, that Adisha possesses the vows of Vajrayana, and that's those 80 verses of praise. So he solemnly says, the end of the page number 39. So we're on the page number 40. So this is a brief history of Lama Adisha, how he attained the expressional attainments. And it is being summarized by Lama Tsongkhapa, and at the same time he is advising us disciples to follow in the same way. This biography delights scholars who understand the key points of scriptures, emulate such excellent beings. And this attainments of Adisha, who has attainments based on the three trainings, is one of the greatest, and it's something which is being praised by all the great scholars. With the training of discipline, ethical discipline as a base, and based upon that, then the meditative stabilization is being generated. So at the beginning, from the individual liberation vows studying, and even from the bodhicitta vows, it is most important is to control our self-centered feelings. Then from the Vajrayana is, so it's very important to So such kind of the practice in the training of ethics, and at the same time taking the recollection memory, and if you're able to stop the distractions, so the kind of meditative stabilization which is avoid of all the distractions, so that is the main ethical discipline explained in the liberation vows. And that is something which is to be followed by all the great scholars. And we are in this first, that Adisha possesses the training and concentration. Adisha possesses the training and wisdom for the common training and wisdom, and then uncommon training and wisdom. So in terms of Guhya Samaja, in the general stages and the completion stages of practice, and the one who has attained the profound wisdom through the meditative practice, and those who have realized the meditative stabilization based on those tantric practice, so having gained those qualities, what Adisha did to further the teachings, what he did in India and in Tibet, and the first in India. In the 80 verses of the praise in the palace of the great enlightenment, when all were assembled together with speech like a lion's roar, you confounded the minds of all who argue for the poor tenets of our own and other schools. We are on the page number 41. So this completes what he did in India and what he did in Tibet. The royal renunciates, uncle and nephew sent to India and success in the two translators. We're going through the process which explains how Adisha was invited to Tibet and how he composed the text Lamp for the Bhatra Enlightenment at that time, and how he revived the Buddhism in Tibet at that time, which was declining and which was at the point of extinction. In general, the glorious Chandrakirti and Padmasambhava introduced the practice of Buddhist system to the land of Sinhal during the early dissemination of the teachings. However, the Chinese abbot Hashan caused the teaching to decline. So it's not that Hashang view has been stopped generally. For example, Chandrakirti. When he constructed the Samye temple, something like an administration office, like there is a special administration set where it's only meant for translation of the texts and the scriptures. And then not just the translation of the text, but even the terms from the Sanskrit and Pali, and especially in the Sanskrit, when new terms and terminologies come into being, they just introduced, they just invented new Tibetan terms. And at that time, the Tibetan language and script has given a great progress at that time. So it normally says that in the Chinese translation, there is a little bit difference. Because the reason is that even before that, the Chinese script was already there. So therefore, when they translate the Sanskrit into Chinese, since those terms which were already there in Chinese have not been changed, so therefore, those terms which already exist even before that has been used, so it may not be at equivalent to the Sanskrit word. So in Tibet, when the first Buddhism was into Buddhist texts were translated into Tibetan, there were not many terms, so a lot of new terms have to be invented. So that's the reason why what is existing in Tibetan and being translated was Sanskrit, most of the words have very equivalent meanings. So we can say that the Tibetan translations were more profound. So what I have to say here is that so there is translation administrative at that time, then there is one especially for the monks, a center, and that one is especially for the monks to maintain their vows and during their rituals. Then there's a special section for the tantric. Then there is a special for the laymen who have general vows. So at that time, he established these kind of sections and administrations. Then there is another one, where it's a kind of administration or a school which is based mainly on the concentration level. And that time, it is being led by the Yana Hashang, and it here the all the attendance mainly depends on the they practice the meditative attention. So we have to make a differentiate here. Even among the Hashang's followers, so even during that time, there is a tradition of followers of Hashang who are practicing their meditative progress and all those kind of practices. Then gradually, there happened to be another follower which just believed that after reciting the sutras of which brings you to the heaven, then you will just be reborn in those kind of the paradise. And even when we speak about the mind's meditative state, there are different ways and there are different meanings. But normally when we speak about the mind and the classification of minds, there are different ways of doing that. Then of course, even in the Dzogchen traditions, in the Sajja, there is also different ways of explaining. Then there is also one way where you just practice on the luminous nature of the mind itself. Just a few years back, when I was in Russia, one student asked me that. The mind which was not the mind as a very still nature of mind, which was not being distracted anyway. So that kind of mind have the potential to gain enlightenment. So the student asks me about that. Then in our ways, when we speak about the name of the Buddha itself, the one, the omniscient mind or the enlightened being, when we speak about the omniscient mind, one with the full understanding, the complete understanding of all the phenomenons. So just a still mind, which is without any kind of distractions and deceiving, but that kind of mind may be still nature, but if it lacks the understanding of all the phenomena, it may be difficult. And they explain like you don't have to study or you don't have to read the text or you don't have to meditate on either unless, I mean, just with the still mind, you may be able to achieve your nirvana. But within the still mind, normally we can have to differentiate between a gross one and a very subtle one. But generally, it's important that we have to get rid of the gross one in order to practice. And for example, Lama Adisha has stated in the foundation of the good qualities is that the wrong views, the object of the wrong views, has to be avoided. And here, when you speak about the object with the wrong views, it doesn't just mean the destructive emotions. So that means the point of attention at that particular point of attention, the object, has to be kept in mind. So therefore, when you speak about stopping or eliminating the destructive emotions, so the gross level of mind which distracts one has to be stopped. And also understanding the nature of the text, the outlines and the details, it is important that we have to keep into mind. Just a few years back, when I, one of the Sri Lankan bhikshus told me, he says that the tantric practice is something very, it is something like you have to meditate on different mantras and all this, and these are all a source of distractions, and it won't be any helpful for you to generate the profound understanding of no-selfness. And somebody asked me whether it's true or not, and I said it may be true, but in general about the stages, meditating about the general stages, we are not speaking that when you meditate, when you are at the general stages of in tantric, we are not saying that it is with the absence of understanding of the emptiness. It has to be combined with the meditative, it combined with understanding of the profound emptiness. With that combination, the very mind itself has to be appear as the deity itself, and that particular object, the emptiness of upon that particular object has to be meditated. So it is stated in the ancient texts by the scholars that the practice or the meditation of general stages will not harm or will not give rise to the arise of self-centered feelings or the self-grasping feelings. So they explain in this way. So suddenly, when you have different kind of distracting minds, and the qualities of that particular instructions has to be kept in mind. The particular instruction has to be combined, and there are different meanings on the different things. Just suddenly, when you have a certain word or the sentence, so it is wrong to say that we just have to meditate a mind which is just only a nature of stilled. So without having the complete understanding of the profound emptiness, so many people criticize the skillful men. So even the Chandravakita is speaking about, there is a semicolon here between the text. So when we when we study the Madhyamika text, sometimes we criticize the Baba Viveka, his views. So it's important that we have a colon here in the text. However, Chandrakirtas, the complete meaning of the text that he have composed is the real, the profound emptiness. But when we speak about the interpretal or the eloquence of the text, so we have to make a difference here. The Chinese abbot Hashan caused the teaching to decline. He did not understand the emptiness correctly and therefore ignored the factor of method and negated bringing anything to mind, even virtues. So even now, the traditions of Nalanda, the Tibetan tradition we have been following still the Nalandas of the Nalanda traditions. And still, even now, when we have discussions with the modern scientists, we are able to sit on at par with the scientists, and we have the potential to analyze through reasonings, and it is due to the kindness of Chandragupta. So if the Chandragupta, so one which has been said by the Chandragupta, if we have said that we do not need to study, just meditative is enough or sufficient, then today we might not be at this point. Same like the Tibetan followers or the Tibetan people, we can consider as a blind followers of blind faith in that case. So Chandragupta is really a great scholar, and in terms of the text, he has the jewels of the Madhyamaka and its commentaries, and Kamalashila has stated the illuminating of the Madhyamaka, Tattva Sangra. And the suchness of the epistemology or the valid cognition composed by Shivatso. Kamalashila. So what I normally speak about the Tibetan originations and arisings, and among the Tibetan origination about the cause and effect and the relation. So these are all very, very clear written in the great commentaries of Kamalashila. So when Lama Tsongkhapa says that he feels great, consistence and those kind of the followers of Madhyamaka scholars who believe in the existence of an interesting reality at one point. And on the other hand, like Chandrakriti, who believes like there is nothing existing from itself. But even without having anything existing from itself, but still the general concept of the things can be established. So not being sufficient or not being satisfied with just the existing of the thing, but if you have to analyze further, in that case, those many things which has been established just from the concept or the designation of the normal person or the generally, it will be very hard to establish or keep. So when we look from the teenage which does not believe in the intrinsic nature, then those teenage which believes in the intrinsic natures seems to be full of contradictory. So when Nagarjuna summarized, so the vote of Lord Buddha's vote of Tibetan origination is the summary of all the teachings. So therefore, Kamalashi is really very grateful and kind to all of us. In the later dissemination of teaching to Tibet, some friends said that there were scholars and yogis misconstructed the meaning of the collection of the tantras. And Atisha has explained very clearly in the Lamp for the Path to Enlightenment that the practice of the secret initiation and the wisdom initiations is something not to be practiced by the monks and the celibate persons. But what he means is that those one who claims or who claims that they are the practitioners of Tantrayana or the secret wisdom and they doesn't conduct well. So he means for those kind of persons. So even for us Tibetans, just recently, if you have a look at the histories in the Western countries, over 300 or 400 years, the Westerners have come to Tibet, and maybe the fifth Dalai Lama, I think probably during the fifth Dalai Lama, they came from Ladakh, and from that, the seventh Dalai Lama, and even his, during the time of his seventh Dalai Lama, many Christian priests also came to Tibet. And some of the Christian priests, I think it's a, maybe the Sera monastery, then they stay in Sera and study Tibetan language, then they also learn how to debate. They also compose a text as the concept, which proves the Creator as the God, and they have written through the dialectical way and written in Tibetan book. So it's very clear that they have been very interested and they pay great attention to all those things, in, even in Tibet. So those ones who really practiced, and who really understand the deep kind of meanings, when they come, there is not much fame or something like this, just a Geshe-la-kam. But when a tulku comes or something, even though they may have do a lot of misconducts and these things, but they have a name of a tulku or a Rinpoche. And even none of the Buddhist nations in the world have do not have such kind of things like what we do, like they have monks dance and all those different kind of ritual dances. And some criticize, and therefore some criticize the Lamaism. And some criticize that this is Lamaism and that is not Buddha's teaching. So the real practitioners of Vinaya, the who upholds all the rules of the Vinayas, have not much respected in that society. They are very seldom seen anywhere. But other side, those who have just a title of a Lama or a Rinpoche, in Tibetan society, the tulku rank of a tulku or a lama is something like a rank in a society, social status. So I used to say that what we have, what we refer to as tulku in Tibet, we can make a few distinctions. Those one who are a tulku, who are not lama, and who are lama but not tulku, and those who are both and none. But, for example, like first, there may be a tulku, someone who claims to be a tulku. He has a title of a tulku, but he has no understanding of, and a guru, he has not beneficial, I mean, he does not have any qualities which has been stated in the Vinaya or Tantra or either. So therefore, it is important that we have to make a classification among lama and real lama and a tulku or a guru. So if you doesn't pay real attention, if you just feel in a general that something is certain or something is, I mean, everything is fine, then really we may be living behind, taken for granted. As Gyatso Tome Tsongpa stated, if you does not analyze your own mistakes, then there is a great danger that you may be indulging in negative activities, even wearing a monk's robe. So therefore, it is very important for you to analyze whether whatever activities, whatever you do, whether it is in pair with the rules of the Vinaya. Or the sutra. So in China, there is some ranks like Dako, where you were given some Tibetan lamas who have been accorded with Chinese costumes. So even in the Buddhist Vinaya rules, we are not allowed to wear the sleeve shirts, but when you have such a, when you are confronted with some Chinese rank, then you wear all those kind of sleeves and all this. So it's, at that time, we may have to ask whether which is more important to you, the Chinese rank or the Vinaya rules. So there is also an instance stated by Lama Disha that when he first came to Tibet, the Tibetan Tibetan lamas came to receive him with all the kind of Tibetan costumes, with kind of different heads, and all came on horses. And so at that time, Lama Adisha just covered his head and saying, the Tibetan ghosts are coming. So then they realized that when Dorje said that the Tibetan ghosts are coming, then they realized that he was not happy. So that they went back and they changed their robes. Then they wear the Vinayas, the monk's robes, according to the Vinaya, and they came to receive him. So then Adisha was glad. So normally during the Lamrim teachings, we used to tell all these things, but we doesn't give much importance to these things. So whatever, in practical, for example, personally for me, I never wear the silk tonga or the Tibetan upperwear. From Tibet I brought some, but I cut it and make it a kind of robe for the Buddha statues. But there is one tonga in silk that is to be worn normally during Galhasa annual prayer. So this is, I keep it as a memory, as a remembrance. But other than that, all these things I destroy, and I cut it and offer to make the robes for the statues. So there, nowadays, from the Ladakh and those remote places, so they try to indulge in those traditional things. If I tell you a small story, a few years back, when I went to PT, I think the Sharis Abbot was there at that time. Do you remember? You were there? You were not there? I conferred a Jispa initiation at that time. It was, the place was Gashar. I think the monks were from PT. Those one who built the Chinese flute, or normally the ritual flute. So he has a very peculiar, very strange cap. A very strange hat. It looks very strange. But if you just still, then it remains very still. So it was a very strange hat, and I asked him, so today you have used all those traditional customs and all those things, it's very good. But is it really necessary for you to wear such costumes? Is it really necessary for you to wear such hats? So it's not necessary for you to, it's even better to say this. So tomorrow he doesn't wear that. Maybe he feel a little bit ashamed of that. So I tell everywhere about these things. If it is something against the text and the sutra, I'm telling directly. So therefore, we Tibetans, taking everything for granted, I also told Renly, the Tibetan term Yaling, it means the flute of Chinese. So it means the flute of Chinese, it's not Tibetan. And the clear way of proving is that in Tibet, in the Namgyal monastery, the trumpet, when they blow the small trumpet, they wear the costumes of Chinese. Recently in recently when I went to Manjuling, when they blow this trumpet, they wear the Chinese costumes. Not just the Chinese costume, they wear something like a hair or some tassel. So it is impossible that this will be a cause for the preservation of Dharma. This is only a cause or a step in preserving the Chinese tradition. So this is a very important that we have to keep in mind. So the main basic of all these things, the root of our thing is to study the texts, all these texts, classic texts. Recently, in Dharamsala, the nuns came from Nepal and all over in Dharamsala to compete for the annual Paramana debate. And I asked them, what kind of text you memorize? And they say some are memorizing the Paramana text and also the they also memorize the Abhisamaya Alamkara's commentary by commentary, and I told them that even I have not memorized those and you are better than me. So you don't understand the meaning and the real quality of the Buddha Dharma, but the exterior you have all the decorations and the costumes, so that is a kind of deceiving the people. Because of this, they did great damage to the maintenance of ethical discipline, the root of the teachings. His excellent being refuted them well. Moreover, he caused their erroneous conception to disappear, and then so His Holiness is reading from page 42. The three ideal qualifications for an author of texts that elucidate the intent of sage in this way. The author should have mastered the five topics of knowledge, should possess instruction that the key points for practicing, should receive permission to compose the text in the vision of his or her chosen deity. And this great master was entered with all three as follows. So His Holiness is reading the last paragraph. With regard to the lineages of the Guru, there are two lineages, that of the vehicle common and that of the Mahayana. With the latter, there are again two, those of the perfection vehicle and those of the mantra vehicle. Within the perfection vehicle, there are two more divisions. On the page number 43. These masters who have such qualities had an inconceivable number of students in India. So he's always going through the names and the list of those students. The great halter of the lineage who furthered the activities of Guru was dropped in by Javichun, who was professed by Thara. So this in brief is the greatness of the author. It can be known in the detail from the great biographical literature. The greatness of the teaching. Concerning the teaching to be explained, the root of this instruction is the lamp for Bhattu enlightenment. There are many texts composed by the altar, but the lamp for the Bhattu enlightenment is comprehensive and fundamental. It is not just about the... This text is not just about examining the ideological factors and reasonings of the text, but it is meant more for transforming one's mind. This matter is comprehensive since it emphasizes the stretch of disciplining the mind. It is easy to put into practice. When Tibetan masters compose the text, we have three outlines. First, refuting the other's view, then putting one's own view, and when they have, and the third one, and it has been established very correctly through the logical reasonings. We're in the page number 46. With regard to the teachings, our Lokiteshvara's commentary on the Lamp for Wisdom says, concerning teachings, so just a mere liberation is even existent in the non-Buddhist tenets and the philosophical schools also. When we meant about the liberation, it is not just like a paradise or a heaven, but it is more a state where you are clear of your defilements and afflicted emotions. In summary, those wrong views and those defilements, when defilements which are part of your own mind, and when you are able to generate a kind of mind which looks at, which understands the reality nature of the mind, and that very defiled mind, which is that very mind which is full of the defilements and ignorance, itself will be seized in the very nature of the mind itself. As it is stated in the Fundamental of the Wisdom by Nagarjuna, it stated that the very nature of the mind itself, the mind which is full of afflicted emotions, will be dissolved or will be extinct in the suchness of the mind itself. And there is a Tibetan term about where the emptiness or the suchness acts as an object, or the suchness of the mind becomes the base or the field where it is being seized. The nature of the mind itself is the clear light, or which is the nature of the empty, but the defilement emotions are something which covers them. And here the Four Noble Truths are being explained in the rough way. Teachings, the scriptures of the Bhagavan accurately teach that which is to be thoroughly known, that which is to be eliminated, that which is to be manifested, and that which is to be cultivated by deities and humans who wish to attain the ambrosial state. So when they meant to refer to the teaching as known, which means the First Noble Truth, the truth of suffering, which is to be understood, then when they refer to the term eliminated, which is for the cause or the origin of the suffering, which are to be eliminated, we are on the page number 47 now. Thus it is contradicted to propound that you should not train in the scriptural collections of the Hinayana because you are a Mahayana practitioner. So therefore, due to the different differences in our ideological or the philosophical differences existing in the different traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, I have an example to tell here. So it was many years back when Kunurumbiche was there. Rinpoche requested me to give a teaching about Dzogchen, One Key Yogi, Kinori, requested teaching. Yes. And I sent him to Kunalama Rinpoche. He came to me actually, but I feel sad that I cannot confer or I cannot do it. So it is stated here that in order to benefit the sentient beings, which is the text or the line here, I have been not able to fulfill his wishes. I have read a little bit about those practices of sakyas. But if I have known all those things completely at that time, I could have tell him roughly about all this, then I would be able to satisfy or fulfill his wishes. So to tell others or to teach others or to tell others about this, it's important that you have understanding of those things for yourself first. So the stanza here, which refers to as benefiting all the sentient beings, you need to have the omniscient minds. It is very true. Then when we speak about benefiting the sentient beings, we are not referring to the sentient beings, whether they are humans or not, and whether they believe in the religion or not, irrespective of all those things. When we speak about all sentient beings, we have to keep in mind that we mean all kinds of sentient beings, irrespective of human or non-humans. Or otherwise, it's just a mere word. Even it is important for us to know the text of the lower schools. Even for a bodhisattva, in order to benefit or in order to render service to all the kind of sentient beings, it's important that we understand or we study all the texts, including the lower schools. So, like for example, even just for Yalukpa, it is not appropriate to study other kind of texts, other traditions texts. Then Nyingmapa, like they don't, if they find it inappropriate to study Buddhist, then it's all wrong. Even for your own practice, if you have all those kind of texts with you and if you're able to condense the meaning of all those things, it will be helpful for you. And secondly, whatever it may be, but what Lama Tsongkhapa has stated about the Tibetan origination, then it appears to me that there's no one which is greater than Lama Tsongkhapa in this respect. If you look at the Madhyamika texts composed by Lama Tsongkhapa, the five main great texts, most probably you will have a rough idea. Then if you have a look at the great Madhyamika texts composed by the Indian scholars, then you will come to think that they may be composed by the same author, even though there may be a difference with the little terms and all these things. But there are not many differences in terms of the words and the phrases or the meaning. Lama Tsongkhapa has stated in the Mala of the Golden, the commentary about the Prajnaparamita. He has stated that happens to be many Tibetan words which are not existing or which are not evident in Indian scholars' texts. So, slowly and if you have an impartially with unbiased mind, if you analyze, then you will find that Lama Tsongkhapa's texts and commentaries about the Tibetan originations are really various. So where is Nishi Thapke? He's here. Tripathi and Nishi Thapke, both of you together, you have translated the eloquence of interpretal texts of Lama Tsongkhapa into Sanskrit. Tripathi was a great Sanskrit scholar, and later he also learned Buddhist, and he was also a later, I asked him, and they translate together the text. So I asked him, you have now translated the text of Lama Tsongkhapa. So the author of this text, whether will be able to count as one of the Nalanda scholars or not, then he told me that the one who composed this text, he can be counted as one of the texts, one of the scholars of Nalanda, but he will be one of the best and the most greatest scholar among the Nalanda scholars, top scholars of Nalanda. And Nyingma And also in Yima Tantra, there is a text. There's an experiential source, experiential song. When we speak from the great meditative state of clear light, there seems to be there no nirvana, no liberation. From the vantage point of Dzogchen Yoga. But then the 18 treaties of the 18 great treaties of Lama Tsongkhapa, we have to take care, we have to study all those things. When I mean like take care or study, it does not mean that it is to be kept in the Almira. And there's the cancer, Dorje Chang. Every year he used to read the one of the texts of Lama Tsongkhapa. You have to give 18 volumes of Lama Tsongkhapa's text he used to read every year. During the winter time. There is, in a few of the texts by Guenchen Mipham, there he used to refute Lama Tsongkhapa's idea about dependent originations. But later, he praised the Lama Tsongkhapa, citing quoting one of the texts of Lama Tsongkhapa about dependent origination. So this proves he was a great scholar who has a really unbiased mind. So thus it is contrary to the Prabhupada that you should not train in the scriptural collections of the Nayana because you are a Mahayana practitioner. For the bodhisattvas, if you are not able to benefit the maximum sentient, it is against the bodhisattvas' practice. But for the hearers and the solitary realizers, they are meant to be not engaged in too much activities which cause distractions for them. But for the bodhisattvas, if someone offer with kind of faith and devotion some offer them some kind of precious stones or gold or something, they have to accept it. They cannot refute it, saying that you're a practice of Mahayana, you're not allowed to touch the jewels. We are on the fourth paragraph now, of page number 47. Fifth paragraph, and the fifth line. We are now in the sixth paragraph. We are in the page number 48. That those must be reliable on all occasions, is said for the Vajra Climax Tantra. Even to save your life, do not give up the spirit of enlightenment, and the deeds of the six perfections should never be cast aside. Moreover, the above crime is more unreasonable because you must promise to uphold all aspects of the teaching when you take the tantric vow. This is in accordance with what is said in the Diamond Dagger Tantra, Integration Tantra, and the Vajra Climax Tantra on the occasion of taking the pledges of Amitabha. We're on page number 49. The bath of the perfection is the bath common to both sutra and tantra. By attending this shared bath, the unshared parts of the mantra vehicle, initiation, pledges, vows, the two stages and their attention practice, progress to Buddhahood is rapid. Normally, I said that the Buddhist tradition in Tibetan is a combination of both Vajrayana and Mahayana trade vehicles. And in the exterior or the outside, we have the practice of the Vinaya rules, or the hearers and the solitaries practicing. And inside, we have the practice of Mahayana traditions, the great compassions and the bodhicitta. And page number 50, the first outline, the greatness of enabling one to understand that all of the scriptures are instruction for practice. The immediate goal of the higher rebirths with better physical features and also higher rebirths has to be all accumulated or gained through their causes, their relevant causes. Therefore, the words of the conqueror, the precious collections of the sutra and tantra, are the supreme instructions. Nonetheless, since students in this later time will not discover the intent of those words by delving into them on their own without depending on valid commentaries and personal instructions of excellent beings, the great trailblazers compose treatises and personal instructions that comment on the intended meaning. The texts composed by Tibetan masters for practice, they have composed it just as they appear to their mind. But for example, the texts composed by the classical texts, for example, for Guide to the Bodhisattvas via practice, is actually a text meant mainly for the practice, but it has been composed with the sense of an author or a scholar. But then if you study the fundamental treatise of the wisdom by Nagarjuna, first you have to study the 26th chapter, then 18th and then 24th, then you will get a general impression or understanding about the text. So in this term, the text composed by Tibetan master mainly for the practice. Other than that, there is not much necessary for Tibetan masters to compose a text which has all the reasons, logical reasons and proof behind it, that it has already been composed by the great Indian scholars and masters beforehand itself. Indian masters preserve the teachings of the Buddha through the reasonings and the practice, not just through the scriptural reasonings. Therefore, for something to be a pure personal instruction, it must bestow certain knowledge of the classical texts. No matter how well you learned it, a personal instruction is only something to be cast aside. If it cannot bestow certain knowledge of the meaning of the Buddha's verse and the great commentaries of their intent, or if it teaches about incompatible with this. There are those who conclude that any classic text should be considered only an explanatory teaching, therefore lacking the key points for practice. They hold that there are separate personal instructions that teach the core meanings that are hard to practice. They then imagine that there are two separate forms of the excellent teaching, a teaching that is explained to you and a teaching that you practice. So here, the Tibetan term, which is always continuous here, those are merely for promoting one's superficial knowledge and eliminating others' misconceptions. They do not teach the deep meaning. Vaishnava 51. The precious teacher said that it is a mistake if after studying many teachings you feel a need to look elsewhere for how to practice the teaching. Even Lama Tsongkhapa said, even though you have heard or heard so many scriptural teachings, but you don't know how to practice, it is because those instructions, those teachings have not been able to, those texts have not been able to appear in your mind as an instructions. So if you just stay with reciting mantras or just reading the text, but if they are not being able to visualize or appear in your mind, appear to you as an instruction, so that is the greatest fault. Thus, there are those who have studied many teachings for a long time but do not know at all how to practice the teaching. When they wish to practice, they must look elsewhere. Their error is in not understanding what I have already explained. Here, the teachings are as set forth in Vasubandhu's Treasure of Knowledge. The excellent teaching of the teacher is twofold. Those teachings have a nature of having a nature of scriptural and those having a nature of realization. We are on page number 52. Kamala Shila's three stages of meditation says, Father, what you meditate on with the wisdom arisen from meditation is just that which you know with the wisdom that has arisen from study and reflection. You do not meditate on something else. This is similar to how you show a horse or a racetrack and then race in there. On page number 52, we are going through paragraph number 4 now. We are on the tea blessing now. The tea blessing for the lineage of the Lamrim Gurus. Okay.
So we're on page 53, the greatness of enabling one easily to find the conqueror's intent. The classic text, the scriptures, along with their commentaries, are the scriptures' instructions. Yet even if beginners, persons without extensive training, delve into them, they will not discover their intended meaning without depending on the personal instructions of an excellent being. Even if they find the intended meaning, their search will require a very long time and a great deal of effort. However, if they depend on the personal instructions of a guru, they will easily come to know the intended meaning. So by using reasoning and doing analytical analysis, when you find that certain teachings are cannot be taken literally, you should not actually disregard the teaching wholesale, but because the Buddha, it should actually invoke within yourself, engender within yourself this special faith in the Buddha for being so skillful in giving teaching according to the dispositions, predispositions of the disciples. So you should not be disrespectful to the Buddha, but that doesn't mean that you have to accept it literally, but you have to interpret it otherwise. So these instructions for the lamp for enlightenment, lamp for the path of enlightenment, will readily bestow certain knowledge of the points of the Buddha's words and treatises. I will explain at length how this is done in the appropriate sections below. So there are teachings of the Buddha which are meant for the bodhisattvas, those who can take the bodhisattva teachings, and those who cannot take them. He has also given teachings which are for those disciples for whom certain teachings are fit, certain teachings befit, and with their selfish motive. So even within the different traditions, we have teachings which are appropriate for certain disciples, certain followers of different traditions, due to certain theological ideas that are taught to them. They serve their own purpose. And we have in Christianity Christians who serve different societies, poor societies, where they set up schools and hospitals, clinics. So the practitioners, the followers of Christians who do this, are actually doing that on the basis of their own Christian faith. We can have the example of the Sisters of Charity, of Mother Teresa's organization, which serve poor societies, poor. One Muslim friend of mine has told me that if you are Muslim, then you should actually extend your love and compassion to all creatures of Allah, because you love and you actually give yourself, submit yourself to Allah. And so this is what he said. So this is how the Islam actually helps its own followers. Philosophically, there may be some logical fallacies, but the system, the religion itself, actually benefits its followers. And therefore, there's reason for us to respect these religious traditions, other than Buddhism as well. And therefore, when the Buddha gave teachings, he gave them with a view that it is beneficial to his disciples in the long run as well as in the short run. So we are on page number 54. The fault of having abandoned the teaching is very grave. And so before that, there's a quotation from the Sat Sutra gathering all the threats. Manjushri, the karmic obstruction of abandoning the excellent teaching is subtle. Manjushri, whoever distinguishes some of the words spoken by the Tathagata as good and some as bad, abandons the teaching. One who abandons the teaching by having abandoned it deprecates the Tathagata and speaks badly of the community. If you say this is reasonable, this is unreasonable, you abandon the teaching. And so we finished that part. 54, page number 54, done. So this middle-length lam rim is also known as short lam rim. Compared to the great stages of the path, treatise on the stages of the path enlightenment, it is shorter, therefore it's given this title. It's called by that name. Also, respectfully, I prostrate at the feet of venerable saints who are full of great compassion. So this is the verse of homage. And so as Lamrim Chamo, in the Lamrim Chamo, Master Tsongkhapa says that I will, for those who need a shorter version of Lamrim, I will write a shorter version without going through the detailed arguments back and forth. And so this is the text that he meant to write. So the homage. So the text has three outlines, introductory element, the actual explanation to set forth, and the conclusion of the explanation. The introduction element has a homage, vow to compose the text, identification of the Dharma to be explained in the context of what the title means, and homage. And then first is homage, then comes the vow to compose the text, and then the identification of the Dharma to be explained in the context of what the title means. And so the term Tong Kun, in certain Lamrim commentaries, there is explanation about this term, Tong Kun. Jangye Rebe Dorje says that some Tibetan Lamas, without knowing Chinese, they gave such explanations. So the term on page 2 of this text, where there's mention of Adisha, how Adisha took birth in an excellent family, there is this line which says, those of Chinese emperor, its pleasure, might, and wealth resemble those of Chinese emperor. Then how Adisha obtained his positive qualities. This has 2 points. How Adisha obtained the qualities of a comprehensive scriptural knowledge. How Adisha obtained the qualities of realization of its correct accomplishment. How Adisha obtained the positive comprehensive scriptural knowledge has 3 points. How Adisha learned the areas of general knowledge, and how Adisha learned mantra, and how Adisha was ordained and learns the collections of inner knowledge. President Cardinal Council. Not only did he, on page number 5, paragraph 3, it says not only did he courageously undertake the training in ethics of the three vows, he also upheld them as he had promised. He kept the vows without transgressing the rules associated with them, and even if he transgressed them ever so slightly, he quickly, very quickly, purified this by means of suitable ritual restoring the given vows. And this is an accomplishment in the training of meditative civilization. This has surpassed the common and uncommon. He has achieved the serviceability of the mind of calm abiding. And uncommon is he had the extreme stability of generation stage. Moreover, he had performed the modes of conduct of yogic realizations, realization disciplines for 3 or 6 years. Adisha's accomplishments in the training of wisdom has two parts, common and uncommon. The common is attaining meditative civilization of special insight, which is union, calm, abiding, and special insight. And uncommon is the special meditative civilization of the completion stage. And then, having attained those positive qualities, the deeds Adisha did for the sake of the Dharma is twofold. Deeds in India and deeds in Tibet. Deeds in India, at the palace of great enlightenment of Bodhgaya, he defeated proponents of base non-Buddhist strict doctrines by means of Dharma 3 times, thus upholding the Buddha's teaching and living in the taints of ignorance, misconception, and doubt. Also, with regard to the teachings of his own upper and lower systems, he spread the teachings so that he was regarded as a crown jewel beyond partiality by proponents of all factions. Deeds in Tibet, clearing up our fourfold, deeds of Tibet, clearing the misconception about the Dharma and restoring the tradition. Lhasa Lama and his nephew sent the two great translators, Yajun Singh and Naksul Sutum Gyawa, to India, one after the other, due to their taking pains again and again to invite Adisha. He came to Upper Gangari during the reign of Zhangzhu Wu and was requested to purify the Buddha, to purify the Buddha's teachings or to reform the teachings. The Buddha, thereupon, he spread the teaching by composing Lamp for the Path of Enlightenment, a text bringing together all the points of Sutra and Tantra and condensing them in the applicable stages as well as others. Specifically, he spent 3 years in Gangari. And so Master Adisha actually brought together the two lineages of the profound view and the extensive practices called the conduct, which came from the two trailblazers. And Master Adisha's master Nagarjuna's text gives more emphasis on in terms of training the mind in bodhicitta. He emphasizes on exchanging and equalizing oneself with others, and this is also what is done by Shantideva as well. So there are three courses of excellence in composing a text, clarifying the sage's intention, being learned, one, being learned in the 5 areas of knowledge, and two, having received instructions for the application of their meaning and transmit the instructions of the perfectly complete Buddha in an unbroken line of exalted master, and having received permission to teach through the vision of protected deities. If a text can be composed with any one of these courses of excellence, with any one of these excellent courses, then it will turn out all the more excellent if all three are complete. This great master, Adisha, possesses all three. And then, due to Adisha's possessing these three courses, his ability to ascertain victor's intention and has 3 points, being cared for by protected deities, and Adisha's lineage is uninterrupted, and the special and the fact that Adisha was learned in the 5 areas of knowledge. As for the teaching, the source text of present instruction is Lamp for the Path of Enlightenment. And presenting this text as possessing the three, being fully complete, easily applicable, and a particularly noble system. Although there are numerous texts composed by the elder, Lamp for the Path of Enlightenment is the perfect completion, being like a root. As it indicates all the points of both Sutra and Tantra summary, in summary fashion, it is complete in terms of content, as it makes that gradual taming of the mind its main topic. It is easy to put into practice, as it is ornamented with the instructions of the two masters who were skilled in the systems of the two trailblazers. It is particularly noble systems compared to others. The greatness of recognizing the greatness of instructions contained in this text are fourfold, and then the greatness of recognizing all the teachings as being non-contradictory. Everything is the victor said, and how all the teachings are recognized to be not contradictory. They all come to be understood as a single person's path to Buddhahood, that is to say, some are primary points of the path, others are appropriate secondary points. And how it is demonstrated through scripture and logic that it would be contradictory not to accept this. So anyone constraining the great scriptures to be explanatory teachings that do not contain the points of practice, and who are thinking that guidance indicating the meaning of the essential points of practice exists separated from that, holds that even in the holy Dharma, the explanatory and accomplishing teachings are found in different places, will create an obstacle for the arising of deep respect for the Immaculate Sutras and Tantras, as well as for the tutors clarifying their intention. You should be aware that the karmic obscuration of abandoning the Dharma is accumulated by despising them, saying that they only outline external knowledge without presenting the inner meaning. Hence, for those who want liberation, the infallible supreme instructions are indeed the great scriptures. Nevertheless, it is possible that due to poor intelligence and the like, you cannot reach certainty through relying on these scriptures only as supreme advice. Therefore, you should seek certainty with respect to them, thinking, I will seek certainty with respect to them by relying on the excellent instructions. But you should not think that the great scriptures do not contain the heart of the matter, because they only outline external knowledge, while the instructions are supreme because they present the inner meaning. How all the Buddha's teachings come into view as useful instructions. The great yogi Jhangchub Rinchen said, someone who has reached a certainty about a handy little volume cannot be said to know all the topics of instruction. This is said about someone who understands all the Buddha's teachings as instructions. We need the kind of understanding that Gomba Rinchen Lama, disciple of the great elder, expressed, saying that he had ground his body, speech, and mind to dust in a single meditation session on Adisha's instructions, and that thereby the understanding had now arisen in him that all the scriptures are instructions. In the words of the precious Dromtenpa, if ever studying the Dhamma a lot, you feel the need to search elsewhere for a way to applying the Dharma, you are mistaken. So likewise, those who study the Dharma a lot over a long period of time period and completely ignorant as to how to set about it, develop a wish to practice Dharma, do not understand, and therefore err in the manner described above. As it says in the Treasury of Manifest Knowledge, Abhidhamma Kosha, the Buddha's teachings are of two aspects, twofold. Their nature is scripture and realization. In accordance with this statement, there is teaching apart from the scripture teaching, scriptural teaching and the realized teaching. The scriptural teaching is how the Dharma should be practiced and they establish the manner of accomplishment, while the realized teaching is what is thus established. Since you practice in accordance with what is to be established, these two act as cause and effect. To give an analogy, it is like when raising a horse. You first show the horse the course, and after showing it the course, it races there. Just as it would be ridiculous to show it a course and then have the race elsewhere. Similarly, when it comes to attainment, how could it be appropriate to accomplish something after having determined something else through listening and reflecting? That is also expressed in stages of meditation. What has been realized by the wisdom arising from listening and reflecting is precisely what should be cultivated by means of the wisdom arising from meditation, just like a horse runs along a course it has been shown. Now let's move to Lamrim Chemo, how to listen and explain the teachings. So how to listen to the teaching in which both this teaching and its authors are great. How to listen to the teaching is explained in three parts, contemplating the benefit of hearing and teaching, developing reverence for the teaching and the instructor, how you actually listen. And contemplating the benefit of hearing and teaching, the verses about hearing and the collections of indicated verses, Udanavarga says, through hearing phenomena is understood, through hearing wrongdoing is overcome, through hearing what is meaningless eliminated, through hearing nirvana is attained. Also, just as someone dwelling inside a house and shrouded in complete darkness has eyes but does not see the forms that are there, so also a person born of noble lineage, although possessing intelligence, does not know until told what is virtuous and what is not. Just as one with eyes sees forms by using a lamp, so through hearing what is virtuous and what is not, you will understand what should be done. So, the text says, to contemplate this, to contemplate the benefit of hearing teaching. So if we all know that we live for our, in order to live our life, we make our living for food and shelter, clothing. So we need to use, in order to attain education, for material gain, for material development, if we need to use our wisdom to gain education, there's no doubt that, no question that we need to use our wisdom to gain knowledge and education for liberation, to overcome our negative transformations, negative emotions. So if you're ignorant of alphabet, you have to learn the alphabet. And this is similar to any kind of thing that we go about in order to overcome the ignorance about them. So once you... So through ignorance, we disturb our mind, and our mind becomes disturbed, and then we become angry, and frustration and so forth grows, and then anger comes, and then we engage in altercation with others, and in worst case scenario, we even commit suicide through depression, and then sometimes because of not eating properly, we get food poisoning, and of course, these negative emotions like attachment and aversion so attachment or desire is taken to be something that helps us, and aversion or anger is used as something which considered as something that actually repels others. We do this because of loving ourselves to have happiness and joy for ourselves. But instead of gaining them, we become overcome with negative emotions, anger, and so forth. And when we have some things, we become attached to. We like them, and we grow our attachment towards them. And when there is something that actually we dislike, we become angry. And so if we want peace of mind, we should know what actually disturbs our peace of mind, and then what are the countermeasures to them. We have to know, and the darkness is dispelled by light, and so darkness and light cannot be together at the same time. When light comes, darkness goes away, and when there's coldness, in order to in order to warm up the room, for example, we need a heating system, and then as the heat increases, the coldness also subsides. And so similarly, this the working of how the countermeasures actually go against the negative emotions that are within us. The principle is same. So in order to reduce our anger or aversion, if we cultivate love and compassion, it will reduce. And so these have to be done by giving thought to them and reflecting on the consequences of these negative emotions, and then thinking of their countermeasures, and then we can actually create peace of mind. So last year I was in Bihar, in Patna, the capital city of Bihar, where the state government invited me to an inauguration ceremony of the Buddhist Vihara that they have actually built. And at the meeting, the chief minister of Bihar, Nitish Kumar, said that through the blessings of the Buddha, he hopes that Bihar state could make a great prosperity and progress. And then when my turn came, I said, if Bihar state had to prosper and progress through the blessings of the Buddha, should Bihar state gain this progress and prosperity through the blessings of the Buddha, then it should have actually achieved them, already achieved them, because the Buddha's blessings have always had been there for the last 2,500 years. But I told him that this blessing of the Buddha actually must go through the hands of an able chief minister. So we all know that desire and anger actually disturb our peace of mind. But if we only pray to the Buddha and ask him, please take away my attachment and anger and aversion, I mean, it's really silly. But what we need to do is actually apply the teaching, integrate the teaching of the Buddha himself, what he has shown as to how we should apply the countermeasures to these negative emotions. And therefore, whatever you hear, it is very therefore the importance of hearing the teachings is emphasized here. So we are not talking about making money or anything like that, but we are actually talking about happiness, creating happiness for ourselves, experiencing happiness for ourselves, and by overcoming creating a peace of mind within ourselves. So while we have lots of obstacles on the path, we can actually transform these obstacles into a conducive condition for our spiritual transformation. So if we really give thought to them and apply the teachings, then this peace of mind can actually be created within ourselves. But when you talk about actually transforming the negative conditions into the path to enlightenment, it's not to say that you stay still when a mad dog runs towards you. I mean, you don't blindly accept that. But here, with Buddhism, it's about transforming our mind. It's not. We don't say that transformation comes just by praying to the Buddha or making offerings and worshiping him. But how the Buddha has shown the path to us by overcoming the negative emotions that are within ourselves by through the application of these counteracting measures. So with regard to the true cessation, has these characteristics of being a cessation, peace, excellence, and then emergence from suffering. And so when we talk about overcoming suffering here within the context of Buddhism, we are not only talking about overcoming temporary sufferings, but actually overcoming all kinds of suffering and reaching the peace, state of peace, or nirvana. So, of course, the mere wish to be out of suffering, even the animals have, but we are thinking about transforming our mind and reaching that peaceful state. And so, therefore, education and learning is very necessary, and therefore, hearing or listening to the teachings is very crucial. And so, having heard, as it is said in one proverb, and whatever you hear should be applied in practice. You have to make a practice your essence of having heard the teachings, and then liberate yourself, release yourself from this prison of or the fortress of samsara easily. So developing the reverence for the teaching and the instructors, the Sutra of Kittigarbha says, listen to the teachings with one-pointed faith and respect. Do not censure or deride the speaker. Honor your instructor. Develop the idea that they are like a Buddha. Also, as the Bodhisattva level sets forth, listen without afflictions of arrogance and contempt and without bringing to mind the five conditions of an instructor. Being free from arrogance means to listen with following in six attributes, listening to an appropriate time, showing homage, showing deference, not being resentful, practicing according to the instructor's words, and not looking for the chance to argue. Being free from contempt means to respect the teaching and one who gives it to and not belittle these two. Not bringing to mind the five conditions means to cast away the thought, I will not listen to this person because he or she, one, has fallen from ethical discipline, number two, is of poor lineage, and number three, has an unattractive physical appearance, and number four, is unarticulate, and number five, or speaks harshly and unpleasantly. Also, it is as said in the Garland of Birth stories, stay on a low seat, show the glory of discipline, look with an eye of delight, show respect and one-pointed obeisance, as if drinking a nectar of words, show reverence and listening. Listen to the teaching with clear delight and a mind undefiled, like a patient listening to the words of a doctor. How you actually listen, how to listen to these two parts. Abandon the three faults of a vessel, relying on six ideas. Abandon the three faults of a vessel. So a sutra says, listen well, thoroughly, and hold it in mind. Moreover, as Bodhisattva level sets forth, listen with wanting, while wanting to understand everything, staying one-pointed, attentive with your mind focused, and reflecting with complete composure. Then relying on the six ideas. Thinking of yourself as a sick person, Shantideva engages. And number two is thinking of an instructor as a doctor. And number three is thinking of instructor's explications as medicine. Thinking of number four is thinking of earnest practice as the way to cure your disease. And number five is thinking of the Tathagatas or the Buddhas as excellent beings. And the wish number six is wish that the teaching will endure for a long time. So relying on thinking of yourself as a person with regard to the Shantidevas engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds says, since you must follow a doctor's advice, even when stricken by ordinary illness, what need is there to mention those who are constantly stricken with the illness of so many faults, attachment and the like? And then with regard to thinking of the instructor as a doctor, for example, when you are stricken by a severe illness, such as wind or bile disorder, you seek a skilled doctor. Upon consulting your doctor, you are greatly delighted and listen to whatever your doctor says, revering him and her respectfully. Likewise, seek in this way a teacher who imparts a teaching. Once you have found your teacher, venerate your teacher with respect and due. Do what he or she says. While doing this, consider it a privilege, not a burden, for as the verse summary of the Perfection of Wisdom in 8,000 lines says, therefore, wise bodhisattvas who have a strong thought to seek sublime enlightenment vanquish pride decisively. Just as the sick rely on a doctor in order to cure the illness, you should rely on the teacher, applying yourself enthusiastically, and then thinking of instructor's explications as medicine. Just as a sick person has a high regard for the medicine just prescribed by a doctor, so too you should review the instructions and the explications that the instructor gives are very important, taking great pains to hold them in high esteem and not squandering them by lapses such as forgetting them. Then, next point, the thinking in earnest, of earnest practice as the way to cure your disease. So page number 561 says, therefore, earnest practice in the statement. Thinking of earnest practice as what clears away the illness of afflictions. So learning certain subjects like history or poetry, of course, has nothing much to do with our transformation of our mind, overcoming our negativities. We can play with words. So earnest practice refers to putting into practice the lessons that a teacher has imparted to you on what should be adopted and what should be cast aside. So first, you have to have the understanding of the whole structure of the Buddhism, and then you know what are the pitfalls. And in Abhisamaya Alamkara, the text is written in such a way that the first chapter deals with omniscient, which is our ultimate goal that we should reach. And in order to reach there, then there are the means, like the path, knowing all, and the bodhisattva path, and so forth. So when you give a teaching, you should have give a very expansive, very broad teaching, and so that the disciples understand the Dharma very broadly. We should not give teachings with some partial teachings, which could lead us to some understanding, but we will not lead us as to how to go about with the practice. And so, so it is important to know what the pitfalls are, And then when you actually practice having gained this broad knowledge of the entire system of Buddhism, then when you actually practice, you have to actually do it in accordance with your own level. You cannot jump to a high practice without actually being receptive to that, being apt to do that yet. And so to do that, you need to know the lessons. For this, you need study. The purpose of knowing them through study is to do them. Therefore, it is vital to put the meaning of what you have heard into practice as much as you are able. In this vein, the verses about hearing says, these verses, exhortation of the wholehearted resolve, as numbers, page number 62, says, the foolish are sorrowful at the time of death, saying, my practice was poor, now what is to be done? Not having found depth, they will suffer greatly. Such are faults of delighting in just the words. Also, like an actor before an audience watching a show, or like describing the good qualities of someone else who is a hero, you fall from earnest practice yourself. Such are the faults of delighting in just words. And then the next two verses. So transforming the mind will not happen within days. So in order to for that to happen, you first have to gain the wisdom or understanding gained through study and listening to the teaching. And then you give thought to what you have heard, and you find certitude in the truth about the teaching. And then you will have the aspiration to apply the teaching. And you have to practice voluntarily. No one can actually force the practice onto you. Like the Chinese try to, what they call the re-education sessions over Tibetans they hold. You cannot do like that with Dharma practice. And so you have to gain certitude. You have to have the conviction to practice. For that, you have to actually understand the teaching. For that, you have to hear the teaching or study the teaching. And then applying the teaching within yourself, once you have heard and gained conviction, and of course, within days or weeks, you will not see changes. But over months and years, like 5, 10 years, then you will see some change within yourself. So this, it's a gradual process. This much I can tell from my own experience. So familiarity with the practice is very, teaching is very important. So to gain familiarity with the practices, you have to know what you are going to practice through learning, and then you have to have the goal of doing your practice. So many of things that we do with our mind actually have to do with our gross level of mind, which are more or less dependent on our brain neurons. But once the brain stops functioning, they will not be there. So we have to go into the inner subtle level of mind, because then these experiences that we develop will go from lifetime to lifetime. So we have people who remember their past lives, but then as they grow up, they actually lose that memory. The memory kind of fades away. So what this shows is that the indication of a past life, the memory of the past life was rather fresh in the young when we were at young age, And then as you grow up, the mind, the gross state of the mind of this life kind of takes over. And then because of that, the memory of the past life kind of fades away. So if we could actually make this in the tantric practice, we can actually develop the wisdom, the concentration of bliss and emptiness, and on the basis of that, we can also develop clairvoyance or higher perception and reading others' mind and knowing past lives and so forth. So it's important to study, to listen to the teachings. And Sajja Pandita says, even if you were to die tomorrow, you should still learn something, so that you leave, you deposit some kind of a money in the bank that you can use. It would be like depositing money for use in the next life. So next is thinking of the Tathagatas as excellent beings, developed respect by remembering the one who set forth the teaching, the Bhagavan, Buddha, wishing that the teaching will endure for a long time. Think how wonderful if, in dependence upon studying such teachings, the conqueror's teachings would remain in the world for a long time. Furthermore, when you explain or hear the teachings, if your mind and the teachings remain separate, then whatever is explained will be inconsequential. Hence, listen in such a way that you determine how these teachings apply to your mind. For example, when you want to find out whether or not there is something smudge, dirt, or whatever on your face, you look in a mirror and then remove whatever is there. Similarly, when you listen to the teaching, your faults such as misconduct, attachment appear in the mirror of the teaching. At that time, you regret that your mind has become like this, and you then work to clear away those faults and establish good qualities. Hence, you must train in the teachings, the garland of birth stories. When I see the form of my misconduct clear in the mirror of the teachings, I develop a feeling of regret and turn my mind toward the teachings. With this statement, Sodasa requested that Prince Sotasoma bestow the teachings. Thereupon, the Bodhisattva Prince, knowing Sodasa's state of mind, that is, knowing that Sodasa had become suitable for hearing the teachings, gave him the teaching. In brief, developed the spirit of enlightenment, thinking, for the sake of all beings, living beings, I will attain Buddhahood. In order to attain this, I must train in its courses. For this, I must know those courses. For this, it is evident that I must hear the teachings. Therefore, I will listen to the teachings. Remember the benefits of hearing, eliminate the faults of vessel, and so forth, and listen with great delight. So, of course, the great teachers in the monastic institutions, when they actually give teachings, what can happen is they actually gain more and more, their knowledge actually increases. Of course, they have put great effort while they worked very hard while they were students themselves. They have learned so much, but still, as teachers, they learn so much more. And this is what our teachers used to tell us. And how to explain the teaching in which both the teaching and its author are great. There are four parts to the explanation. So, contemplating the benefits of explaining the teaching, it is very beneficial to impart the teachings without concern for worldly things, profit, honor, fame, and the like. For as the exhortation to wholehearted resolve says, there are 20 points that are made in this sutra. And then develop belief in the benefits of explaining the teachings from the depths of your heart as they are set forth in many collections of sutras. Developing reverence for the teacher, the Shakyamuni Buddha and the teaching. When the Bhagwan So these 20 points are being read out. And so there are people who sell dharma these days. We have to be very careful. There are many people in amongst Tibetans and then also Westerners. People write books or give teachings, and you have to be very careful lest you actually look for more money and fame by giving teachings. And this happens in China. I have met Chinese friends recently. They told me that there are 400 to 500 million Chinese these days who are Buddhists. So, which means this is they have the biggest number. China has the biggest number of Buddhists. And so, since there are people who take interest in Buddhism, there are some Tibetans who actually pose as Dharma teachers. And so, I have met some people who came from Chengdu. Who told me that there are many people who do Dharma business. So you have to be very careful about this because you could be pulling, actually be a disgrace to the Dharma. So we usually recite the Heart Sutra in order to dispel any hindrances from demons or evil beings, which is... So Chusan Lama Rinpoche has said that it makes him feel very sad when he sees people who actually give teachings for money and fame. So one of the pension lamas in the past was very old and lived very old, and one Mongolian came to request for teaching. And he brought offerings, and the Lama actually said, "No, I can't see well." But then his attendant, the secretary to the Panchen Lama, has told him that if not possible, it's not possible that you don't teach. You must give teaching. And so the Panchen Lama actually wrote, said that it should be written in a very big letter so that he could read. So finally, the Panchen Lama actually gave in to the Changzhi, the secretary, and at the end of the teaching, he said, "Now this is what the teaching that I actually give in accordance with the wish of my secretary." The secretary actually liked wealth. But then there was another person who came for teaching and who had really was a very poor but very good practitioner. So Panchen Lama actually, without complaining, gave teachings. So this is how the great masters do with regard to giving teachings without looking for gain, any gain. And Zelenato Rangtel also has said that he... decided not to take any offerings for giving teachings to people. And so when I saw this story, like biography of him, I decided not to take any offerings. So before that, I actually took offerings, but for myself. But I actually distributed the offerings. So it was like when I did that, it was like acting as a treasurer. And so sometimes it could be that some people might think, oh, he actually left me out of this offering that he was distributing. So at one time, somebody wrote a letter saying, during the time of the Matsuda Adisha's invitation, and Kudunyongju was actually left out of the list of people who were invited, and he complained that his name was not there. And the person actually said, actually, I have written such and such person. I have said mentioned all these names, and I have actually at the end said, et cetera. So you are included in that. I have said, et cetera, there in the list, at the end of the list. And then Kudunyongju said, am I somebody who should be included in that word? And then in Mongolia, some Tibetan lamas had some function and for giving teachings. And the disciples offered a huge, big, thick in Taiwan, it happened. And then some other, when the Lama was offered this thick and red envelope with money, somebody was saying from the side that this is what the Lama needed. So this is not good. If our teaching discourses of Dharma turn out to be for money. And without being requested, as it is said in the Sutra of the Discipline, Vinaya Sutra, it should not be done without request. So this is under differentiating between those to whom you should and should not explain the teaching. So do not explain the teaching without being requested to do so. As Gunam Prabha says in the Vinaya Sutra, it should not be done without request. Even when requested, it is necessary to investigate to see whether or not a potential student is suitable to receive the teachings. So these days, some people say, I'm giving teaching, so come to my teaching. So this is tantamount to actually committing this grave negative action, this mistake of giving teaching without being requested. So, first you should have people who request the teaching, and even if you are requested, you should not actually accept right away, indicating that you actually can give such teachings. And so, it's said, suitable to be received teaching, and if even when not requested, it is appropriate to explain the teachings to someone only if you know them to be a suitable recipient. So the point is to actually help others through your teachings. So concerning this, the King of Concentration Sutra says, should someone request you to bestow the teachings first, I'm not trained extensively. Then say, you are knowledgeable and wise. How can I explain the teachings to one as great as you? Do not impart the teachings casually, but only after you have investigated whether the listener is a suitable recipient. If you know that the listener is a suitable recipient, explain the teaching even without being a request. And then the Gunaprabha's sutra on the discipline, quotation from there. So giving teachings, there are certain criteria of not giving teachings. Of course, when someone is really sick, then you can give teaching even if they are wearing hats or anything like that, because the point is to help the person. It is suitable to explain the teachings to those who are opposite of this. Further, these instructions apply to persons who are not sick. How a session should be concluded in relation to both hearing and explaining the teaching. with strong aspiration, dedicate the virtue that have arisen from explaining and hearing the teaching to your temporary and final objectives. If you explain and listen to the teachings in such a manner, then you'll be unquestionably receive the aforesaid benefits even from a single session. So if you're not careful, the teachings could actually give rise to negative emotions. They could serve to increase your negative emotions like attachment and anger. So page number 67, finished. Let's move on to the other Lamrim text, the middle length. Page number 11, explanation of how the teachings possessing two greatnesses should be listened to and explained. So how the teaching possessing these two greatnesses should be listened to and explained. And how to listen. Think about the advantage of listening to the Dharma. Developing respect of the teaching and those who teach it, the actual way to listen. In the Garland of Birth Stories, it says, he who through listening fills his mind with faith, grows firm, rejoicing in that which is excellent. Wisdom is born and stupidity vanishes. This is well worth paying for with one's own flesh. Listening is lamp against stupidity, the greatest wealth no robber can carry away, a weapon destroying the enemy, mental darkness, the best of friends, giving guidance with skillful means, near and dear if you are poor or not. An inoffensive cure against sorrow's ills, the foremost army, destroying an army of faults. It is the best fame and treasure and splendor as well. If you meet noble beings, the best of gifts, and in assemblies, it is the delight of the wise. It also says, after listening, make your attainment the essence. Make your practice there, since you will be released from the stronghold of birds with ease. Keep thinking again and again about these and the other advantages of listening and generate resolute appreciation from the bottom of your heart, developing respect for the Dharma and those who teach it. And the next outline is the actual way to listen. Next is giving up the three faults of a vessel. The faults of a vessel turned upside down, facing upward, or unclean, or leaking. So if a vessel is turned upside down or held facing upwards but is unclean or is clean but with the bottom leaking, then even if rain is made to fall on it by the gods, the rain cannot go in, or even if it goes, it will be polluted by the dirt and therefore it will not fulfill the purpose of being drunk and the like, or even if it is not spoiled by dirt, it will not stay but leak out. So with regard to practice of the Dharma, especially Buddhism, it's not about just restraining refraining from wrong doings, but also not reaching heaven or anything like that. But Buddhism is about practice based on the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. So with regard to the Noble Truth of suffering, it's not just that painful suffering or experiences, nor the changeable suffering, but the very fact of life in samsara being which is brought about by the force of our karma and delusions, and particularly delusions. So of course it will come later. Buddhism is about, and usually I think that the teachings pertaining to the beings of small scope or small capacity could be common to the non-Buddhists as well. So with regard to, for example, wrong view, the different traditions can have their own way of interpreting wrong view. In Christianity, of course, through the practice of morality and serving others, they are actually creating merit, and which will become cause for them to, which would be cause for them to reach higher rebirth in the next life. And then they have the practice of taking refuge as well, like we do, like looking, considering or regarding the God, the Creator, as infinite love. So all the theistic religions believe in the God as the infinite love, and with that, they submit themselves to God and reduce their self-centered attitude. And whereas in Buddhism, the self-centered attitude is overcome by meditating on selflessness. So the real practice or real teaching of the Buddha starts with a prayer. A practice of Buddha starts with the teachings pertaining to, pertaining to the beings with medium scope or medium capacity. So, because of the understanding of developing the understanding of selflessness, so once you see that grasping at true existence and is the root of all our suffering and negative experiences, then you will develop the aspiration to actually overcome it and reach liberation. All of us want suffering and not want happiness and not suffering, from the human beings down to the smallest insects. But suffering is something which continuously happened to us. And many of them are actually created by humans ourselves. It's not, of course, out of that we do it intentionally, but out of ignorance and not knowing. So, of course, what we have distorted views, distorted views about reality, and because of that, and we create causes which we may not be aware of as being the causes of suffering, but they become causes of suffering. So we are overpowered by the three poisons of attachment, anger, and ignorance, and therefore we suffer. So we are on page 14 of the middle length Lamrim, at this outline where it is contemplating the discrimination of the one expounding the Dharma as a doctor. And the next one, generating the discrimination of the instruction as medicine. Just as a patient greatly appreciates the medicine put together by the doctor, you should regard the instructions and precepts taught by someone expounding the Dharma as the most important thing, and then make an effort to hold them in respect rather than wasting them through forgetfulness and like. And next, generating discrimination of persistent practice as the cure. This has three points. The first is the contempt of striving. The contempt of striving for words without practicing them. And next is the importance of discrimination of oneself as someone ill. Oh. So earnest practice or persistence in this statement above signifies putting into practice the topics of adopting and discarding modes of conduct from the spiritual teacher's instructions. Now, to put them into practice, you need to know them. And for that, you need to hear them. Again, after hearing and knowing them, you need to practice them, and therefore it is crucial for you to engage in the meaning of what you have heard to the best of your abilities. Otherwise, at the time of death, you will have to regret about what you failed to accomplish. And the rest, and then next point, contemplating the discrimination of the Tathagatas as exalted beings, and then generating the wish that Dharma tradition endures or lasts long. So usually when Lama gives teachings, they first make three prostrations at the throne, visualizing all the lineage masters of the particular teaching, and then when they get on the throne, they say this verse from the Diamond Sutra, Karma Rabri Marmitang, like the star, the cataract, or and so forth, and meditating on impermanence to overcome their pride or arrogance. And as it is said in the 8 verses of training the mind, may I hold others as high and higher than me. So you are sitting on a throne and looking down at the audience and giving teaching. So if you look, if you check within yourself your own qualities and criteria and qualifications, and sometimes it gives me feel ashamed. At this point, outline which says, considering the benefits of explaining that the Dharma.
Sawada Tadis, Halo Bondan,
So it seems, according to the Garden, the old Garden edition, there's some passages are missing. So His Holiness is just reading that part. So actually, that passage was not missing from the print of Garden, old print of Garden, but actually His Holiness skipped that. Back part of the folio. So there's a story about someone who actually goes to homes to perform pujas, and he was actually mumbling through while he was reading. So while he was breathing in and out, he was actually mumbling because. And then the host lady told him that when people actually read, they actually breathe out, and when people actually breathe in, they don't read things, texts. And then this pujari told the host lady that, in that case, while I breathe in, do I have to actually pass through the pages empty without saying anything? The way in which, having related this to mind, it is necessary to listen. What this is saying is that you should not divorce your mind, which is to be tamed, from the teaching that you have learned. You should not make this distinction between theory and practice as such. So in the Jataka Mala, where the son of Sudasoma asked Prince Chandra for Dharma teachings in these terms. It is said, beholding the form of my bad behavior in dazzling mirror of Dharma, anguish and rises strongly in me, and I turn toward the Dharma. Knowing this to be the thing of a suitable vessel for hearing the Dharma, the Bodhisattva gave him the teaching, and how to keep in mind the purpose of attainment. In short, thinking I shall attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. To attain that, I need to train its causes, since apparently it is necessary to listen to the Dharma, for that I shall listen to the Dharma. You should generate a mind of enlightenment. Bodhisattva, consider the benefits of listening and listen with joy, abandon the faults of vessels. And then how to explain, this has four parts, considering the benefits of explaining the Dharma, and generating respect for the teacher and the teachings, the attitude and activities of to explain with, which has two parts, attitudes and activities, attitude, then the activities, in order for oneself to attain Buddhahood, for oneself and others. So you should dedicate the merit gained from teaching and listening for Buddhahood. Mm-hmm. and having washed and dressed in immaculate clean clothes in clean pleasant place, you should sit on a cushion on a Dharma throne. If you then chant a mantra for subjugating demons, the demons of gods and gods of the demonic category will not come closer to you than a parameter of 100 yojanas, and even if they come, they will not be able to create any obstacles. And it says in the sutra requested by Sagaramati, therefore you should chant that mantra, and with an extremely radiant facial complexion, give your explanations conjoined with its conditions for ascertaining their meaning, examples, proofs, and quotations. The distinction between whom the explanation should and should not be given. And even two, the Gunaprabha Sutra of Discipline says, do not act without being asked to. And then the next, how generally to proceed at the end. This has four parts. What to do afterwards, the actual things to do, the benefits of this, the general mode of behavior of saints, and the advice to cherish them. The next explanation of the stages by which the student actually instruction should be guided. Now let's switch to Lamrim Chemo, the great stages. So how to rely on a teacher, the root of the path, and how the student trained their minds after having relied. So, when you study something, you have to know and then actually apply the knowledge. So similarly, in the case of our practice of Dharma, our success in practice depends on our study and application of it, the teachings. So there are two parts of the explanation on how to rely on it. It has a somewhat elaborate explanation for developing certain knowledge, a brief indication of how to sustain the meditation. And someone, Adisha's Digest states, one who abides in the lineage of Mahayana has relied on an excellent teacher. Also, there were the scripture collection of bodhisattvas states, in short, attaining and bringing to completion all the bodhisattva deeds, and likewise attaining and bringing to completion the perfections, levels, forbearances, concentrations, super knowledge, retentions of teaching heard, teachings heard, dedication, aspiration, prayers, confidence to speak, and all the qualities of Buddha contingent upon the Guru. The Guru is the root from which they arise. The Guru is the source and creator from which they are produced. The Guru increases them. They depend upon the Guru. The Guru is their cause. And Buddha also says in the same way. So just as we look at the example of others to do something, even in worldly works that are like mundane, and we look at examples of others. Likewise, in the teachings of spiritual traditions, we should do the same. All the religious traditions teach us the love, compassion, the practice of love, compassion, tolerance, self-discipline, and so forth, contentment. But the troubles that we have, the suffering and problems that we have, are rooted in our ignorance. And this is something which only Buddhism teaches. So Padova says, for attaining freedom, there is nothing more important than Guru. It is insufficient to learn the activities of this life by watching others, but you will not learn them without an instructor. Likewise, without a Guru, can we succeed in traveling to a place where we have never been, having just been reborn from a miserable realm? Kuno Lama Rinpoche used to say that the writings of Master Tsongkhapa are very, it's like a big framework within which you can do so many things. And so it covers a broad range of teachings. So now next is the defining characteristics of the teacher to be relied upon. So in this, Master Tsongkhapa goes through these other lines, like the defining characteristics of the students relying upon the teacher and how the student relies upon the teacher. And so it is not only that Lama should be knowledgeable, but you have to have, the Lama has to have some other criteria to be relied upon as spiritual master. So generally, in the scriptures and commentaries, many defining characteristics of the teacher are taught from the viewpoint of individual vehicles. However, the following is the description of a teacher who instructs you in the stages of the path to the three persons of different capacities and guides you to the Mahayana, which is the path to Buddhahood. So, of course, we have the teachings such as the Pali in the Pali tradition, Vinaya, practice pertaining to Vinaya, the monastic discipline, and there's a criteria of a Lama to whom you rely upon with respect to a day-to-day conduct of a monk, checking with the master and seeking permission and so forth. So here, the master is someone who actually leads you through the Mahayana path, which is the path to Buddhahood. With respect to this, the Maitreya says in his ornament for the Mahayana Sutra, so this is very, very significant and powerful thing. So rely on a Mahayana teacher who is disciplined, serene, thoroughly pacified. So, and as it is said in this quotation from Mahayana Sutra, an ornament of Mahayana Sutra, those who have not disciplined themselves have no basis for disciplining others. Therefore, gurus who intend to discipline others' minds must first have disciplined their own. How should they have been? How should they have been disciplined? So it's not just lamas who can do some kind of a miracle, like stopping and controlling rain and so forth. But it is not helpful for them to have done just any practice and then have the result designated as good as a good quality of knowledge. They need a way to discipline the mind that accords with the general teaching of the conqueror, the Buddha. The three precious trainings are definitely such a way. Thereupon, Maitreya indicated them with these three terms: disciplined, serene, and thoroughly pacified. With respect to what Maitreya said, discipline refers to the training of ethical discipline. So that's about disciplining the mind, the master having the criteria of being disciplined. And then serene here refers to having accomplished the training of meditative concentration. And thoroughly pacified refers to having accomplished the training of wisdom. This is done by specifically analyzing the meaning of reality in dependence on meditative serenity, wherein the mind becomes serviceable. However, to have only the good qualities of knowledge that come from disciplining the mind with three trainings is not sufficient. So these criteria are given in the Mahayana Sutra Alamkara by Maitreya. And so that text is actually a text of the Chittamatra tradition, philosophical school. And so the thoroughly pacified here refers to understanding or developing, accomplishing the training of wisdom, which means the wisdom realizing selflessness, the selflessness of persons, and then whereas according to the Prasangika Madhyamaka, which doesn't make any difference between the subtlety, as in subtlety between the selflessness of persons and selflessness of phenomena, this thoroughly pacified may refer to accomplishing the training of wisdom, realizing selflessness of persons and phenomena which become common, which are common to even the Shravakayanas. And then so however teachers must also have the good qualities of scriptural learning. Therefore, wealth of scriptural knowledge refers to being erudite concerning the three scriptural collections and like. Geshe Drumtenpa said that when the gurus of the Mahayana give an explanation, they must cause their students to have a deep understanding. When they are putting the teaching into practice, they must demonstrate what is helpful at a time when the teaching is on the wane and what is useful in the situation at the hand. Knowledge of reality refers to special training of wisdom. So with regard to the teaching of the Buddha, it is said that the Buddhas do not take away the sins of others, like taking out some thorn which is stuck in our body. But by giving the teaching, the showing the reality, and by through the practice of right conduct, right developing the right knowledge, and so through these practices, you will be able to accomplish the goal. So sins cannot be washed away by with water. The Buddhas do not wash away the sins of sentient beings, nor they do not take away the sufferings of sentient beings, like taking away, picking out the thorns. And they do not transpose their own realization into others. And so the realization of the Buddha that the Buddha himself has cannot be transferred into others. That's not the way Buddhas help others. But the Buddhas help free others by teaching the reality. So we have that potential to know the reality, this intelligence we have, and we have this cognitive power and the intelligence to judge right from wrong. And therefore, the Buddha shows us the path, what is right from wrong. But what happens to us is that we regard things to have some kind of an independent existence just as they appear to. So we have to know there's incompatibility between the appearance and what actually is. So there, of course, science and technology has developed so far that today, when the scientists actually check and the particles, atoms, and subatomic particles, when they become very subtle, what they find, the scientists find, is that through their experiment and through their research, they find that there's nothing objectively existing. But although to us things appear to have objective existence, the reality is that they don't have that way of existing. So just as things appear to have some objectivity, likewise, we actually cling on to that way of existence of the things. So the way the Buddhas help sentient beings is by showing or teaching the reality. And ultimately, which means they teach us that ignorance is the root of all the root of all suffering. And all the other negative emotions like attachment, anger, and so forth. And therefore, when we are able to see that nothing has any objective existence, that helps also to reduce our attachment and anger, which actually tries to hang on to some objectivity in the things that we see as beautiful or are repulsive. So Padova says, with regard to energetic, refers to page number 73, energetic refers to constant delight in others' welfare, has abandoned dispiritedness, refers to never being tired of giving an explanation again and again, to bearing the hardships. So Padova says, these five qualities, loving concern, knowledge of reality, and the three trainings are the foremost. So these five qualities, in other words, my master Xiang Zun is not very learned with regard to all the scriptures and cannot withstand dispiriting circumstances. Therefore, he does not even thank those who help him. However, since he has these five qualities, he is helpful to whomever is in his presence. Nyendun does not have any skill in speech at all. Even when giving a single dedication of an offering, he can only think, none of these people here understands what I am saying. But as he has the five qualities, he is helpful to whomever enters his presence. This being the case, those who achieve their own livelihood by praising or explaining the good qualities of trainings while not striving diligently to practice them are not suitable to be teachers. That sort of meaningless praise is only words. It is similar to when someone who diligently seeks sandalwood asks one who makes a living by explaining the good qualities of sandalwood, do you have any sandalwood? And that person replies, no. So about 15 years ago, so one Chinese from mainland China came to see me and told me that there were some Tibetans coming to China proper, proclaiming as Dharma Rajas, king of the Dharma. And then the Chinese devotees, who were very faithful and in serving the Tibetan. And so eventually what they found was that these Tibetans who came as Dharma Rajas had come to China seeking money and sex. So asked me if I could do something. I told him I'm living in India and I cannot do anything from here directly. So you have to actually learn the criteria of a guru and check these people who claim, who come to China claiming to be Dharma Rajas, whether they qualify these 10 qualifications criteria or not, and check them. So it's even said sometimes that a person should actually check another one for 12 years to be able to confirm that the person is a qualified and authoritative guru or spiritual teacher. Therefore, you who wish to rely on a guru should understand these defining characteristics and strive to seek one who has them. So it is not the Lama is not about someone who is, whether someone is on a high or low throne. In the past, in Tibet, there were some cases where the greatness of a lama is actually judged by the number of horses in their convoy or not. Zabedur Rinpoche was, when his Dharma activities were spreading, flourishing, one time he actually ran away from his place to live in a retreat. And he didn't have much, didn't carry much with him, but just a few clothes and luggage. And on his way, he found a family house, and the family actually used him as their servant. And his disciples learned that Pedro Rinpoche had actually gone away from his own retreat. And his disciples came in, went in search of Pedro Rinpoche, and they landed the family and asked the mother of the family whether Pedro Rinpoche had come by here. It's that the mother said, "I don't know Pedro Rinpoche, but I have someone who looked like a pilgrim. And then the mother asked, "What does he look like?" And then the students described Pedro Rinpoche, and as she heard the description, and as she was listening to the disciples of Pedro Rinpoche about the description of Pedro Rinpoche, she realized that the person she had actually sent out to throw her own urine, which she had actually done in a urine pot, was Pedro Rinpoche. And then the mother of that house actually became so embarrassed that she ran away from her own house. And then during Domtempa's time, Domtempa was going to on a path, and then on the way, Domtempa met with one monk who was well dressed, and the monk actually became tired on his way, and he took off his shoes or something and asked this man beside him if he could actually carry that. And Domtempa said, "Of course, I can." And he actually carried the load. And as they were approaching the monastery near where Domtempa was going, the monks of the monastery had actually lined up to receive Domtempa. The monk kind of wondered whom these monks are actually receiving by standing in line. It could not be for me, he thought. And then he asked God Domtempa, "What is this? What are they doing?" And Domtempa said, "The monks are supposed to be receiving me," and very politely told that. And this monk or this tantric practitioner, actually, he ran away from that place once he knew about this. So Domtempa himself says, "Even if people actually revere you to be the highest on their crown, you should hold yourself the lowest." So even some people may revere you as the highest person, you should still hold yourself as the lowest in your mind. So Tibetans usually don't look at the criteria whether some lamas actually qualify the qualities of a lama as said in this Mahayana Sutra Alamkara. And then the text also says, also those who wish to have students should understand these characteristics and strive to possess them. So they should have they should check whether they have the qualities of scholarship, nobility, and gentleness. And so you should be an example to others to whom you are going to give the teachings, like a role model. So because this is a degenerate time, it's difficult to a teacher to find a teacher who has these good qualities in the entirety. Therefore, what should we do if we do not find a teacher, such a teacher? The reply is the tantra requested by Subhu states these lines, just as a chariot with one wheel will not go down the path even though it has a horse, so too, without assistance for meditation, people will not gain attainments. These assistants should have intelligence, a good appearance, great purity, be of reputable lineage, and inclined towards the teachings. They should have a great confidence, perseverance, and have disciplined and disciplined the senses. So thus, as said, thus it says that assistants should have these defining characteristics in their entirety, or at least 1/8 of these. At least, the guru should be someone who has more knowledge than the students, and be compassionate. Therefore, accept as the defining characteristics of a guru a minimum for 8 and all defining characteristics set forth here, combining those that are easy to acquire with those that are difficult to acquire, the defining characteristics of students who relies upon the teacher. So page number 76, we just covered the part which quotes heart of the middle way. Through taking sides, the mind is distressed, then whereby you will never know peace. Taking sides is to have attachment to your own religious system and hostility towards others. Look for it in your mind and then discard it. For it says in the Bodhisattva vows of liberation, after giving up your own assertions, respect and abide in the texts of the abbot and master. The question is just that one characteristic enough, though non-partisan, if you do not have the mental force to distinguish between correct parts of good explanation and counterfeit parts of false explanation, you will not fit to listen to the teachings. Therefore, you must have the intelligence that understands both. By this account, you will give up what is unproductive and then adopt what is productive. Are these just two enough? So having intelligence is a favorable condition that gives rise to these four. And we finished with this part on page 77. And move on to Lamrim, middle-length Lamrim. An explanation of the stages by which a student of the actual instructions should be guided. By which a student should be guided through the actual instruction. The stages of by which a student should be guided through the actual instruction, relying on a spiritual teacher. The root of the path, relying on a spiritual teacher. As all goodness starting from the development of a single positive quality and the decrease of a single fault in the mind of the disciple has its root in the sublime friend. Spiritual guru, right from the beginning, the way to rely on him is important. And then the characteristics of the one to be relied on, the virtuous spiritual friend. Identification of a guru and the characteristics of a guru. Identification, although generally speaking in terms of individual vehicle, a lot is said about this in the scriptures along with the commentaries. Here only a virtuous spiritual friend who guides students on the path to Buddhahood, the Mahayana, by gradually guiding them on the path of the three types of beings will be presented. The ornament, so the characteristic of a guru has 3 points, the highest characteristic, which has three two points, positive qualities that the guru himself needs. The ornament for the Mahayana Sutra says, in the Mahayana Sutra, Alamkara, it says that students need to rely on a spiritual teacher endowed with 10 properties. So these 10 qualifications of a master which are given in the Mahayana Sutra Alamkara. So Pujangwa has said, as I listen to the accounts of the saints, I look up onto them. And Dershi said, I take the old men of rating as models. Accordingly, we need someone with more qualities as a model to look up to. That being so, those six properties are positive qualities you yourself attain. The remaining ones are qualities for taking care of others. As they say, the sages do not wash away evil with water. They do not remove the suffering by being sufferings of being by hand. They do not graft their realization onto others. They liberate teaching the truth of reality's nature. As is expressed here, apart from teaching others the path in an unmistaken manner and taking care of them, nothing can be done, such as washing away negativities with water. Among the four characteristics related to this, eloquent means experience with regard to the stages of guidance and skilled at putting the meaning across to the minds of those to be tamed. Loving means having pure motivation to teach the Dharma and teaching motivated by compassion without regard for material gain or respect. We need someone like Potaba who said to Changaba, son of Lima, however many explanations of Dhamma I have given, not once have I claimed the applause as my own. There is no migrating being that is not pitiable. Without thought means that he constantly delights in the welfare of others. Never disheartened means that he does not become weary due to explaining things over and over again, but rather willingly bears the hardship of explaining. Potaba said the three trainings, realization of suchness and the loving heart, these five are the main things. And the minimum characteristics has two parts, the actual minimum characteristic, even if it is difficult due to times, and to find someone who has the complete set of characteristics like that, it is said that you should not rely on anyone whose faults are greater or whose faults are positive qualities are equal, but on someone whose positive qualities exceed his faults. The expediency of association with the characteristics. Such a guru bringing about complete liberation is a perpetual root of aspiration. Therefore, those wishing to rely on a guru should be aware of them and make an effort to look for someone who possesses characteristics. These characteristics, those wishing to have students rely on them should also strive to acquire these characteristics. Explain the characteristics of one who relies on the student. So we have completed with this part D on page 22, which ends with this line, henceforth and you should strive henceforth and in future lives after courses for the courses after courses for making them complete. So we'll stop here for today. Dogun nam da shin la chö bar sho idam ga bi shin ye dang tsü shin zhu be chonam che da nang ge par do chö be tsö nye war shi war ching ge la tu su yan da la ma ta de chi me I never be separated from life to life lifetime to lifetime from this perfect guru nam ge be un par do chö chi de ve de ve ve che so ne de ve ba kon sa de lam rim prayer Lamgye ne, yo de ve sam pe tabi, de ve ne, bas se chen, pen de de de, se var chepar se che ke ve, me jo tin le, le du chan jo lamgye rin be kyan, ne de lamgye ne. From the two collections, vast that space that I have amassed from working with Alpha at this practice for a great length of time, may I become the chief leading Buddha for all those whose mind's wisdom's eye is blinded by ignorance and so forth. So, may all the virtuous deeds we have collected throughout the three times become cause for the flourishing of the teach tradition of Lama Losang Trakpa.
Now, Cho Suk Chin Sumen, the Sam Churang and Be Juba Malu, Cho Sum Dembe Zene Chu Yurji.
Nah, I'm Jurmji.